KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in Bayview.
Outer Sunset.
I live in Bernal Heights.
St. Francis Wood.
La Lengua.
Coal Valley.
Alemany Boulevard.
Coming up, is this flu season worse than normal?
The emergency rooms have been so full, ambulances have actually had to wait to drop people off.
Then we'll get lively with some son jarocho, a style of music and dance that's all about community.
I'm not a huge fan of like the kind of music where you just sit in a chair and watch like the symphony or something. I like music where you're dancing or participating.
And we'll hear from a crochet artist on how he finds liberation by stitching.
Crochet jam is really a lot about stuff that I need in a society that either will or will not provide it. I'll let go of that. I'll provide it. I'll do it.
That's coming up on Cross Currents. Well, the flu season is here, and it's really felt like a nasty one this year. For most of us, this means we run the risk of feeling just blah, achy, lethargic, high fever. But for some people, especially the elderly and very young, it can be much worse. Almost 100 people under the age of 65 have died in California since the beginning of the flu season. 20 have died in the Bay Area and Santa Cruz alone. KALW's health reporter Marissa Ortega-Welch joins me now to talk about getting sick and staying healthy. Hey, Marissa, how you feeling?
I am feeling good, Hannah. Thanks. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. So is this flu season? It feels like it's worse than others. I have a doctor friend who works at Santa Clara Valley Medical Center, and she was saying she's just exhausted. A lot more kids have been coming in with the flu.
Yes.
What is going on?
I talked to the Communicable Disease Control Director for Alameda County, Dr. Erica Pond, and she told me Alameda County is seeing the same thing across all parts of the health system, from, you know, the advice nurse hotlines to doctor's rooms. They're slammed. The emergency rooms have been so full, ambulances have actually had to wait to drop people off. Mm. And nationally, we're seeing the same thing. It's shaping up to be one of the worst flu seasons in the last decade.
Okay, why?
Well, for one, the flu season started early this year, so we could be seeing it peak early, too. It only just now is starting to show signs of slowing down. But also the strain that's dominant this year, you know, every year one or two strains of flu virus are dominant.
Right.
This year's dominant strain, it's just a particularly nasty one. The symptoms people experience are worse than those caused by other strains.
Mm-hmm. So are more people dying this year than in past years?
With this strain, there have been more hospitalizations, more visits to doctor's offices, and more deaths, especially among older people. So in terms of numbers, for California, 97 people have died since the beginning of the flu season, mm-hmm. and 20 people have died in the Bay Area and Santa Cruz alone. And that's only people under the age of 65. California public health officials only count flu deaths for people under 65.
And do we know how many of these people did take the flu vaccine?
I talked to the Communicable Disease Control Director for Contra Costa County, where they've seen some deaths, and she's told me, numbers-wise, that about two-thirds of the people who have gotten severely ill have not had the vaccine. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these numbers, I should say, too, it's still a little too early to give complete numbers for the flu season, but definitely an argument for getting the vaccine. And the other thing that is important to remember is that we actually don't even know how many people exactly die every year from the flu. I mean, it's tens of thousands of people that do die every year from the flu. It is mostly the very young, the very old, and people with underlying health problems like heart and lung conditions. And we don't know the exact number because a lot of times what they're dying from is respiratory illness caused by the flu, and that's what goes on their death certificate.
Okay. So is it because the vaccine this year doesn't have the strain of flu virus that's making people sick?
No, and that's a common misconception going around. Remember, every year doctors try to predict what the dominant flu strains will be this year and then create a vaccine that contains those strains.
Okay.
This year's vaccine does contain the dominant flu strain that's making people sick. It is actually a good match. Mm-hmm. The problem is that this strain, it's just a hard strain to create a vaccine for. The vaccine just doesn't protect as effectively.
So should people still get that vaccine?
Yes, they should definitely still get the vaccine, and it's not too late. The vaccine decreases your chances of getting the flu, but it also keeps your symptoms from being as severe if you do get sick. So even if you think you're invincible and you don't need the vaccine protects other people from you. So like all vaccines, it's really a community service to get it. Also, people over the age of 65 should know there's actually a more powerful vaccine available for you. You should ask your doctor about it. But if your doctor doesn't have it, just still get the regular vaccine. Some protection is better than none.
Okay, what about people who do not have access to a doctor?
Yeah, I asked Erica Pond from the Alameda County Communicable Disease Control about that too, and they do have a mobile vaccination van going around and offering people flu vaccines if they want it. You know, if you aren't tapped into a healthcare network, you can also just go to your local drugstore and pay out of pocket. You know, it might run you anywhere from $20 to $70. So you can just go ahead and get a vaccine that way too.
Okay. So this all sounds scary. What should you do if you do get the flu? At what point should you go to the doctor?
Yeah, it's a good question. If you are having any problems breathing or any chest pain, you should definitely call your doctor. Also, if you run a high fever, like above 101.5, that lasts for days, more than 4 or 5 days, you should call your doctor. If you're feeling disoriented or confused or dehydrated, say you haven't peed all day, that's a bad sign, and you should call your doctor. If you don't have those symptoms, though, it's probably best to just stay home, stay hydrated, and ride it out. You can call your doctor or a clinic and ask for a prescription for an antiviral drug. They would rather you call than come into the office because they really do want to reserve the emergency room for people who need it. But of course, when in doubt, call your healthcare provider. Go see your doctor.
All right. And of course, we should mention flu prevention. Wash your hands, hand sanitizer, cover your mouth when you cough or sneeze. My little girl has memorized and has us all memorized the sneeze in your elbow thing.
Yep, that is adorable. Yes, just like Obama or Elmo taught you, sneeze into your arm, cough into your arm, not into your hand. Because if you cough in your hand, you go touch that doorknob, you're spreading germs.
Yeah.
Yes, wash your hands and stay home for at least 24 hours after your fever has gone down. That is hard for us as adults, but it is important to remember, don't spread your germs around.
Okay, great stuff. Thanks, Marissa.
Thank you.
Marissa is our health reporter. You can reach out to her at health@klw.org.
You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hena Baba.
Son Jarocho is a style of Mexican folkloric music that's been growing roots here in California for at least 50 years. The music grew out of the historical mix of indigenous, Spanish, and African cultures in the state of Veracruz, which borders the Gulf of Mexico. It's often practiced at a type of gathering called a fandango, where the community shares music, dance, poetry, and food. This week, the 6th annual San Francisco Son Jarocho Festival takes place with workshops, concerts, and, yes, a fandango. The theme this year is honoring the women of Jarocho. And right now, we're going to hear from two women from the local group Dia Pason. Founder Maria de la Rosa and Cassandra Millspaugh brought their jaranas, small guitar-like instruments, to play a few songs and talk about their experiences in the Son Jarocho community.
My name is Maria de la Rosa, and I'm a performing artist in the San Francisco Bay Area, and I am an artist, a musician with Dia Pason. I am Mexican-American, so culturally there's music and the culture that we practiced growing up. I mean, it was just part of our soundtrack at home. We heard it all, you know, rock and roll or mariachi or cumbia, son jarocho. Actually being a part of the art form started in college when I connected with the Ballet Folklorico and started learning more about the specific dances. Once I graduated, I came back home to San Jose. I'm from San Jose. And right about that time, I joined a group in San Jose, Los Lupeños de San Jose. Not only was I learning to dance this stuff, but it was alive. I mean, there were real musicians, you know, and that energy around the tarima and in the room just doesn't let you go.
Yeah.
My name is Cassandra Milspa, and I am also a performing artist in the Bay Area and a Spanish teacher here in San Francisco, and I usually play jarana in Diapason. Son Jarocho is often played in different venues, but the fandango is the center, and it's basically a party, and it can be for many different reasons or different occasions. And the tarima is like a dancing platform, and it can be small or big or really big. That's kind of the center of the fandango. I'm not a huge fan of like the kind of music where you just sit in a chair and watch like the symphony or something. I mean, I think it's beautiful, but I like music where you're dancing or participating and people feel like when they come that they can jump in and be part of what's being created.
I refer to Diapason as a collective because it's never the same group of artists. This kind of music is very improvisational, and it's a folk community music, and it's very similar to a lot of other roots musics, things like bomba en plena in Puerto Rico, or a blues jam session, or a jazz jam session. The way that people participate in this music, they all know the same basic set of music, and so it can be, it's pretty flexible and organic on how we can put things together.
This song is called La Carretera. For me, a son is a song from the Son Jarocho tradition. It's a song that is always in movement and change and has a structure, yet is different every time it's played.
La Carretera is double entendre. The literal translation is highway or road. But it also can refer to the a woman who is traveling that road. And so there's verses or there's lines of poetry in the song that talk about the curve of the carretera or the highway, or you could also say the curve of the woman's body. So it's like, you know, a double entendre there. In starting the group, you know, originally it wasn't ever intentional to be a woman's group, and it's not a woman's group. It's woman-led. And most of the time that we play, not all the time, but most of the time that we play, there's more women than men. When I first started playing the music versus dancing, there was a group of women that got together and invited me in to start teaching me to play. And they were feeling, and I was too, feeling being shut out by the male musicians. And they wanted to do a women's only group and, you know, forget the men, we're going to blah, blah, blah. And I was like, no, you know what? I don't see that as the answer. I don't see that as what needs to happen. I feel like that it's very important to have that balance and that dynamic and those voices. This music is about a community music, and it shouldn't be shifted one way or the other. It needs to go with the moment and who those personalities are that are in that moment at the time. And that's one of the reasons why I like having it as a collective.
As a woman in Son Jarocho, and I think in music in general, I do feel like many styles of music are male-dominated. And I feel like traditionally, from what I've seen and what I've experienced, there's a lot more women who dance in the Son Jarocho tradition than play, but that is changing. And a few years ago, I started playing guitarra de son, or requinto, which is what's kind of like the lead instrument. And I feel like when you play requinto, you come and you like kind of take charge, and you're like, I'm here, I'm going to declarar, because you're in charge of saying what son is going to be played, really. for me at least, and my personality, it kind of goes against it. But I'm really trying to take on that role.
There's a conversation sometimes that happens about being, you know, authentic, and that means that you have to be from Veracruz in order to play the music or represent the music or teach, et cetera, et cetera. And we've created some new music that you can't really call a son jarocho, but it's influenced and by how we practice and how son jarocho happens. And that's a very, very important part of diapason for me. You know, I'm not trying to be out here saying I'm a jarocha. You know, I'm me, and I'm from the Bay Area, and this is our flavor. Son has always been open to that, and I think people don't really kind of understand the depth of that. You know, in and of itself, it is the product of three cultures. And it's always received influences from different parts of Mexico, from different parts of the world, different instrumentation. That's part of it being son and allowing for that flexibility and figuring out how all that comes together.
That was Maria de la Rosa and Cassandra Milspa from the band Diapason. That piece was produced by KALW's Jen Chien, and you can catch them performing this Saturday evening at San Francisco's Brava Theater as part of the 6th annual San Francisco Son Jarocho Festival.
This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. Ramakan O. Arwisters is a fabric and social practice artist who likes to say he has, quote, no reverence for systems of control. He's best known for creating a series of public art events called crochet jams, where he makes space for people to create a communal work of art. Ramakan came to our studios to talk to KALW's Jen Chien.
You have got a kind of unusual fact in your background for a contemporary artist, in that you have a master's in divinity. I'm wondering, were you on the path to ministry before you became an artist?
I was. I thought I had listening skills and the ability to help others.
And was that from direct experience then? You were just that kind of friend, like your friends came to you with their problems?
They did. And they also noticed that I wasn't one who wanted to always fill in the blanks and wanted to hear myself talk. I wanted them to just get it all out until they were pretty much exhausted expressing their feelings and emotions. I felt as though it wasn't my job to try to explain what they're feeling, because it's up to them. It's their experience and it's no one else's. But the more I was in seminary, I felt seminary wasn't quite who I needed to become. I felt incongruent in seminary. I felt that being Black and gay in the church was not what the church wanted me to be. I could not be who I needed to be. And I knew that if I had chewed, swallowed, and digested something that wasn't authentic to myself, then I'd have to maintain that lie to however you want to define a supreme being. You know, I'd have to marry. I'd be lying to my wife, or lying to my children. It would just be
just
this
antithetical.
God! It was just this combination of lies on top of lies on top of lies, and I thought that was not congruent to the teachings of Christ. I needed to leave. And that's what I did. I got my master's, and I left.
Was that a painful decision for you?
No.
No.
Leaving wasn't painful. The realization was that the society did not want me as I am. And I think it was the best thing that ever happened. It was good that I left, because I don't think I'd be any good to anyone if I wasn't authentic. You know, I would just be perpetuating negativity. If I couldn't define myself on my own terms, then I can't allow other people to be who they are in my presence. And that isn't redeeming, really.
So after you left, you got your master's in divinity. How did you then find your way into the art world or into becoming an artist?
Actually, I'd been painting and drawing.
You'd been painting and drawing already?
Already, uh-huh. Since I was a teenager. Uh-huh. So my parents, they weren't really comfortable with me being a gay, you know, son growing up in the 60s and 70s. They weren't very comfortable with that.
And you were out to them?
No, uh-huh. Not when I was a teenager. Mm. So, but one way to keep my parents at bay and not to worry about what, you know, is that I would draw and do my homework on the kitchen table. I was not that, I wasn't hyper-masculine, and I was definitely hiding the fact that I was the opposite of what society would agree would be what a man is when it comes to loving other men. And I knew it very early. So I figured one way to keep my parents from saying, well, why aren't you playing football, or why aren't you playing baseball, or whatever, why aren't you hanging out with the little girl next door as a teenager, I would just do my work at the dining room, so they'd see me, right?
They'd see exactly what you were doing.
And, he's not in the streets. He's not confronting the police. So we know what he's doing, and so that's fine. Mm-hmm. But it was a great way to hide my feelings through my art, which is now I don't need to hide them. They're more conscious now. My feelings are much more conscious in my work than they ever were before.
But it seems like you opened up that channel towards expressing them. Through the arts. From that early
That's
age.
That's correct.
One of the things that you've become known for now is also inspired by a childhood memory, and that's your crochet jam.
Correct.
Which is a social art practice, and you say it's inspired by childhood memories of you quilt making with your grandmother.
Yes.
In North Carolina. So can you talk first a little bit about what crochet jam is and then where it comes from for you?
Crochet jam is a public event where I invite participants to have an experience where they're not being told what to do and they're not being judged in a safe environment. And they experience social interaction, creativity, and liberation through the folk art tradition of rag rug making. And how it started is that a childhood memory came back to me. My grandmother would always make quilts, so did my mother, and so did my great-grandmother. They all made quilts. So one day, as a 12 or 13-year-old, I was, playing in the yard and came up to my grandmother's house, and she said, come here, boy, and help me with this quilt. And I thought, oh, quilts? So I go there, and she says, any color, any pattern you want. I'll help you add it to my quilt. She didn't say, here's a pattern. Here's a system of control. You stay in this pattern, and then we'll work together. No, she said, any color, any pattern you want. And then I'll show you how to attach it. So it was a very embracing experience. I mean, she never talked. We never talked about what was happening on the inside of me, about my identity as a black male, my identity as a gay male, my teenage boyfriends at the time. All this. She may have known about it, but this is a woman at the time in her 60s and 70s, and so a black woman in the South. She knows how to feel stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to be spoken. You can feel it. So I feel very grateful about that. Then I thought, instead of me out going to other people, asking other people to give me something they either won't, can't, or refuse, why not give to others what I need?
Hmm.
Why not give to them, an environment where they feel embraced, where they feel cared for, where they feel heard? It's safe. They can let down their defenses. And they're just crocheting, using strips of fabric. Doesn't matter what they're crocheting. We're not following a pattern. I'm not saying, we're making this, we're making that, or how does it look? When people ask me, is it beautiful? I say, how does it feel? And they go, I feel fantastic. That's all that matters.
You are a counselor. That's like that classic sort of therapist joke. Well, how does it make you feel?
you're good. Crochet jam is really a lot about stuff that I need in a society that either will or will not provide it. So I let go of that. I'll provide it. I'll do it.
That's a very beautiful idea to me, how you put it. Why not give people what I need?
Yes.
And I wonder if you connect that to your impulse originally to go to seminary. Is that?
Oh, there is a continuity of my past with my current work. There's a thread that runs through all of it, really. Even drawing at the kitchen table was a way of like, well, my parents weren't prepared to hear who I am. So I had to figure out a creative way of navigating my feelings, and I used art to do it. And I'm still doing it. Now I'm doing it with others in public.
That was Ramikan O. R. Wisters speaking with KALW's Jen Chien. His current show called Mending is at the Patricia Sweetaw Gallery in San Francisco. That's also where the next Crochet Jam will be on February 10th. All the details are at KALW.org. Click Cross Currents. And that's the show. The Cross Currents team includes Asala Sanipour, Janae Darden, Raquel Maria Dillon, Lisa Morehouse, Zaina Nasser, Truk Nguyen, Andrew Stelzer, Marissa Ortega Welch, and Josh Wilson. Our engineers are James Rollins, Gabe Graben, and Jackie Sajiko. Our line producer is Hannah Kingsley Ma. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. This music is by San Francisco's Dirty Denim. They play a grittier version of traditional doo-wop. Hear the all-female outfit for yourself at Hemlock Tavern in San Francisco this Friday night. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.